The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, welcome to the program. I'm Brad McDonald, and I'm pleased to be hosting the show today. It's been quite a long time since I've been in the Trumpet Daily radio studio. I'm going to have to remember how to do this. Later in the program, we're going to look at one or two developments down in Jerusalem. And then I'd like to finish off the program by talking about an article posted to thetrumpet.com today or yesterday from Christopher Eames. And just about the sheer number of archaeological discoveries that have been found proving the Bible and proving biblical history. But first, on today's program, I just wanted to start out by recalling an incident that occurred last Friday here in the UK. Last Friday, about 10,000 students from around the country committed truancy and joined what was called the Youth Strike for Climate protests. So thousands of youths, thousands of teenagers, and some of them were actually 6 or 7 years old. Thousands of children across the United Kingdom last Friday refused to go to school. And instead, they fell on the city centers of some of Britain's largest cities. And they were protesting what they believe is government inaction on climate change. The protests were inspired by Greta Thunberg. She's a 16-year-old student from Sweden. And since last August, Greta, I guess, has been she's been taking each Friday off of school, and she's been protesting outside Sweden's parliament building. In the past couple of months, Greta Thunberg has become a bit of a rock star in the climate change world. She's done a TED talk. She went to Davos and did some interviews there. She's been to a number of climate change conferences, and she's just really traveled the world talking about how, you know, she doesn't believe that we're doing enough. In fact, she doesn't believe that we're doing anything to combat climate change. So last Friday, thousands of British school children took a day off school, and they fell on different cities around the country protesting Theresa May's inaction to combat climate change. And it really was just a scene of total chaos and lawlessness and incivility. One scene that really got my attention was there was video footage on social media, video footage on Twitter, of a whole bunch of these teenagers in Trafalgar Square, and they were clamoring all over the Nelson Column in Trafalgar Square. If you've been to Trafalgar Square, you'll remember the Nelson Column. It's just this iconic statue testifying to Horatio Nelson. At the foot of the statue, I think there's 4 or 5 massive statue lions. Again, really just depicting the British Empire at its heart. It's really just an iconic scene in Trafalgar Square. But last Friday, there were probably 20 or 30 teenagers clamoring all over the Nelson Column, and they had all these placards with just these ill-informed, cheap shot little sayings criticizing the British government. They were chanting horrible, despicable, vile chants at Theresa May and the British government. I mean, I can't even repeat the language on some of the signs that these children were carrying them. Some of the mantras I could repeat include, if you won't act like adults, we will. This is just what was written on some of the signs that I saw. If you won't act like adults, we will. Another one said, system change, not climate change. System change, not climate change. Another one said, who put these criminals in charge? That's a pretty bold accusation made by a 13-year-old. Who put these criminals in charge? Accusing Theresa May, accusing the British government of criminal activity. As I said, there are all kinds of other signs with little writings and sayings on them that I could never repeat on the radio, full of swear words, full of curse words. I mean, it was a scene of total disrespect and rebellion. Hundreds, probably thousands of teenagers in Trafalgar Square. But then there were scenes like this in British cities all over the country. There was just no respect, no civility. It was total mayhem. Children just excited to have a day off school. 6 or 7 year old children swearing at the government, trying to bring down the government. System change, not climate change, read many of the signs. And then what was really hard to read about and really hard to witness was the amount of support and praise and admiration these children received from the media and from politicians, and I would say from most adults. Social media on Friday and over the weekend, the social media just exploded with positive messages of support from you know, British members of parliament and from celebrities and from media and the journalists. All these people were just marveling at how brave these children were to stand up against the government, to stand up and take on Theresa May. How brave they were to get out there and defend the environment. Just a couple of examples here. I'll just read an article from, this one's from The Guardian. This is from Friday. The title of the article is "The School Climate Change Strikes Are Inspiring, But They Should Shame Us." What the children are doing is inspiring, and what the adults are doing, well, we should be ashamed. That's basically what this author was saying. The quip says, Greta Thunberg led the way. Children skipping classes to take the moral lead is an indictment of adult complacency. That's the quip. Children skipping classes to take the moral lead is an indictment of adult complacency. Now, if you watch those protests, if you saw some of that footage of those children climbing all over the Nelson Column, just disrespecting Trafalgar Square, disrespecting the leaders of the past. I saw another photograph of teenagers climbing onto that statue of Winston Churchill that stands adjacent to Westminster. But here he says, you know, these children were skipping classes to take the moral lead. There was no leadership at those protests in London. There were no solutions put forward by these little children. There was no informed conversation. There were no facts. There was no science. It was a scene of anarchy. It was a scene of lawlessness and incivility and total disrespect for Britain's government, for Britain's institutions, for Britain's political system. Anyone can do that. Anyone can do that. They weren't taking the moral lead. I read one article, or maybe it was a tweet from a man who he was kind of chuckling at the behavior of these children protesting down in London, and you know, he said, I've got two teenagers. And if they were so interested in taking care of the environment, why don't they start by turning off their bedroom lights, by not putting clothes in the washing machine so often, and by taking out the trash or going out to the streets and picking up some trash? The point he was making is no teenagers would do that. They're not interested in actually living responsibly. Or most of them, I should say, aren't interested in, you know, doing what they can on a day-to-day basis to save power, to save energy. Anyway, back to this article from The Guardian. Such is the upside-down, topsy-turvy state of our world that the children are now the adults and the adults are the children. In Westminster, our supposed leaders, men and women of mature vintage, keep stamping their feet and demanding what no one can give them. And then there's a paragraph here. They insist they should be allowed to gobble up all the birthday cake and still have cake left to eat, threatening to storm out of the European Union and slam the door behind them. So this is an article about, you know, the student protests across the country. But in the second paragraph, he has to take a swipe at Brexit. He has to take a swipe at those leaders who are following the will of the people and trying to negotiate Britain's exit from the European Union, saying that, you know, those leaders, by leaving Europe, are behaving like little children. And then, of course, you know what's coming next. There's the customary, there's the now routine accusation leveled at Donald Trump. The article says, in Washington, meanwhile, Donald Trump, aged 72 and three quarters, has screamed and screamed and screamed until he is sick, pounding his little fist on the table as he demands money for the big wall of bricks he wants to build. So there it is. I mean, this article is about students in the United Kingdom protesting climate change. Yet here in the third paragraph, the author somehow has to take a swipe at Donald Trump. And then he's got a couple of quotes in here, and he's talking about how Donald Trump is behaving like such a baby, such a child. Meanwhile, these children that truanted from school, refused to go to school on Friday, breaking the law, sending their schools into logistical chaos as they try to figure out what to do with classes and how to make up classes and should they teach those students that didn't protest, what should they do? Those children, well, we have to admire them. They're the leaders. They're the supreme moral figures. But perhaps these comparisons are unfair, not to Trump or the Brexiteers, but to children. Because while Donald Trump has invented a wholly fake emergency, there is no threat of imminent invasion by migrants on America's southern border. And while the threat of a no-deal crash out from the EU is, if all too real, entirely avoidable, it has fallen to children to point to the emergency that is neither fake nor easily averted. It has fallen to those so young they are not trusted to decide what they can eat or when they can go to bed to sound the alarm about the crisis that matters most, the crisis of the climate. I mean, this man is serious. This is serious. I mean, he recognizes there that these kids, they're not even old enough to be trusted to know what to eat and to eat responsibly. They're not even mature enough to go to bed and then wake up on time and get off to school. But when it comes to the issue of climate change, everything's fine. They are the moral authority. They are the responsible ones. They're the ones that are taking the lead that we need to be proud of. Don't worry about the fact that they don't know what food to put in their mouths every night and that if they were left to themselves, they'd, you know, well, most of them, I suppose, would just fill up on McDonald's and Coca-Cola. Don't worry about the fact that if their parents weren't there to get them out of bed in the morning, they probably, a good portion of them, wouldn't make it to school. Don't worry about that immaturity. When it comes to climate change, you know, the most important issue of the day, these children are setting the example. A little further down, he says, at first sight, the reaction surely has to be one of unfettered joy. Unfettered joy. That was not my reaction when I saw some of the video footage coming out of Trafalgar Square. It made me upset. It made me upset to see these little anarchists climbing all over the Nelson Column, shouting filthy, filthy accusations at Theresa May. 13, 14, 15, 16-year-olds. Some of them were shirtless. Some of them had their hair dyed funky colors. It was total rebellion, total anarchy. I had no joy watching that. Right there at the feet of Horatio Nelson. I mean, they should look up and take some lessons from Horatio Nelson. He was 13 years old when he left his family. I think he was from Nottingham or something like that. He was from the middle of England somewhere. He was 13 years old when he left his family, and he went off to become a midshipman in the British Navy. 13 years old. And he didn't return home very often after that. A 13-year-old boy off to serve as a midshipman in Britain's Navy. Off to serve his country. Off to sacrifice for his country. Doing a job that was incredibly dangerous. How's that for maturity? How's that for an attitude of selflessness and service and sacrifice? How's that for courage? Now that, I'd call that moral courage. And how many of those little school children clamoring over the Nelson Column last Friday would be prepared to do that? To leave their home, to not see their parents for months, even years, and to go off and to live in a stinky ship. That's sacrifice. That's moral courage. That's bravery. Taking a day off school, having someone pay your bus fare or your train fare and descending on a city and then, you know, making some miserable chants about changing the system or bringing down Theresa May while hanging out with your friends and talking about it on Snapchat and Twitter. Where's the bravery in that? That's easy to do. Anyway, back to this article. At first sight, the reaction surely has to be one of unfettered joy. Well, as I said, it was an unfettered joy when I saw some of that footage. That a little bit later on in the article, he talks about how hopeful he is that these children are going to change the course of our future when it comes to climate change. I'm more hopeful than that. There are signs that the climate crisis is finally getting the attention it deserves. Watch would-be Democratic challengers to Trump in 2020 fall over themselves to embrace the Green New Deal, a vision of transforming the economy to save the planet. Anyway, we can conclude the article there, but the point is, these thousands and thousands of children, some as young as 6 or 7 years old, they were applauded. They were applauded by Britain's media, by Britain's leaders, even by some government officials, especially in the Labour Party. Britain's adult population, I would say for the most part, loved it. They loved it. Really, there's just something deeply disturbing about this whole dynamic. Deeply disturbing. What has the country come to when we have 6 or 7 year olds, 6 or 7 years old, wanting to overthrow the system? I mean, they don't know what they want at 6 or 7 years old. They're just repeating what the 14, 15, 16 year olds are telling them. And they're just repeating what the liberal media is telling them. What's the country come to when you have these students chanting filthy accusations at their leaders, at the British government? The amount of filthy language on those signs and just the level of disrespect toward Theresa May and the leaders of this country, it was shocking. It was totally shocking. I mean, when I went to high school, some of that language, I mean, we were never allowed to use that language, of course, but even my friends were never allowed to use the language that was being used at these protests. But here it was just being used as a matter of routine. No one thought anything. I didn't even read a single article. I didn't even read a single article from an adult marveling at the level of incivility and the disgusting behavior and language being used by 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 15, 16-year-olds. That's because it's normal. That's our culture today. I mean, I didn't even read that many articles from people criticizing what these students were doing. There was one article I read from Toby Young at The Spectator. The title of the article was, "If children want to protest against climate change, why not do it at the weekend?" And I wouldn't even say that this article is a stinging rebuke of those protests. But he at least challenged the teenagers, and he challenged the National Teachers Association and the authorities who supported these protests. Just a couple of quotes. In spite of this, the National Association of Head Teachers has given the strike its enthusiastic blessing. So the National Association of Head Teachers was all for these students committing truancy, leaving school, breaking the law. A spokesman for the union said, "When you get older pupils making an informed decision, that kind of thing needs to be applauded. Society makes leaps forward when people are prepared to take action. A day of activity like this could be an important and valuable life experience." Watch the video. Watch the video. It wasn't an important and valuable life experience for those teenagers. They were just having fun not being at school, being with friends, shouting and screaming uncontrollably at the government. Another reason why the NAHT shouldn't be welcoming this day of activity is because school children are being encouraged to participate on false pretenses. And then he has this section about Greta Thunberg. That's the Swedish girl who's been protesting every Friday outside Sweden's parliament. She isn't saying that they're not doing enough, the government that is, to combat climate change. She isn't saying that they're not doing enough. No, she claims that they're not doing anything. This is what she said in her TED talk. "Everyone keeps saying that climate change is an existential threat and the most important issue of all, and yet they carry on like before." So that's what she said. She continued, "You would think the media and every one of our leaders would be talking about nothing else, but they never even mention it." So the point Toby Young is making is that these thousands of British school children out there, I mean, they're supporting an argument that has no facts. She's wrong. They're out there participating on false pretenses. There's not even any truth to the fact that the British government and world governments are not doing anything to combat climate change. I mean, they're doing all kinds of things. I mean, how many climate change conferences do you see? International regulations and policies signed. I mean, here in Britain just this week, Honda announced that it's closing down one of its factories in Swindon, I think it is. And the reason it's closing it down is because at that factory, they were manufacturing mainly diesel cars. And there's, across the world, there's a move away from diesel cars and toward electric cars. There's all kinds of policies. There's all kinds of changes taking place. I mean, remember some of the changes Barack Obama made in America when he was president? Shutting down coal mines, enacting all of this legislation, this green legislation. I mean, there's been a lot of change that has taken place to, you know, combat climate change. There's plenty of facts. There's plenty of evidence to support that. But still, according to this young girl, and you know, if you were to ask these thousands of children and teenagers protesting the street, there hasn't been any change. I follow that journalist Toby Young on Twitter, and he was absolutely pilloried on social media for that article. He was taken to the cleaners. And again, if you read the article, it's incredibly mild. All he was saying is, listen, you know, they're doing this based on emotion. There's no fact. And then at the end, he basically said, well, why don't they just do it on the weekend? Why don't they just do it on the weekend instead of taking a day off school? Better yet, they could combine it with picking up litter, which really might do something for the environment, he wrote. That's right. That's right. I didn't see a single video where all of these, you know, morally sound, environmentally friendly teenagers were so concerned about the environment that as they protested, they were bending down and picking up the trash on London streets or Birmingham streets. That's how concerned they were about the environment. Didn't see any of that. Really, there's just been a total there was a total capitulation in the face of this army of rude, selfish, uncivilized children that took to England's streets last Friday. It was really, really sad to see. And for those who are familiar with Bible prophecy, and for those who have been following this program and that read the trumpet, all sorts of prophecies will come to mind when we think about this subject. Probably the first prophecy that will come to mind is the prophet Isaiah's writings in Isaiah chapter 3. Isaiah chapter 3, I'll just read a couple of scriptures here, but in Isaiah 3 and verse 1, the prophet says, "For behold, the Lord of hosts, does take away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stay and the staff, the whole stay of bread." So this is when it talks about Jerusalem there, the prophet is talking about the end time nations of Israel, Britain and America. "God takes away from these nations the stay and the staff and the whole stay of bread and the whole stay of water." Verse 2, "God takes away," quote, "the mighty man and the man of war, the judge and the prophet and the prudent and the ancient." God takes away. He takes away the Horatio Nelsons and the Winston Churchills and the William Gladstones and these great leaders of the past. "The captain of 50 and the honorable man and the counselor and the cunning artificer and the eloquent orator, they're all taken away in the end time. And what do we have?" Verse 4 gives the answer. "And I will give them children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them." The children shall rule supreme. The children shall be the ultimate authority. In verse 12, the prophet continues, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead you, cause you to err, and destroy the way of your paths." I mean, we saw that prophecy. That prophecy was on full display in Trafalgar Square last Friday. Living, vivid, powerful display. I just wanted to conclude this section by going back to an article that Mr. Armstrong wrote back in the 70s, and he was writing about teenage rebellion and the influence that children and teenagers have in our society. And again, this was back in the 1970s. Just a few quotes here. He says, "There are those who, in their self-confident, uninformed optimism, assure us that today's adolescents are no different and certainly no worse than those of past generations. But the facts prove otherwise." I think most people today, certainly Jonathan Friedland, the author of that Guardian article, but a lot of people today would actually look at adolescents and children and teenagers today and say, "Well, actually, you know, they're better than teenagers of the past." I mean, Friedland's making the point that, you know, morally, they're more astute, they're more upright than the adults of today. Mr. Armstrong continues, "But the facts prove otherwise." He's writing this in the 70s. He wrote, "Human nature is the same, but we simply live in a different world today." Listen to this. Look how dated this is. And we could update this, and maybe I will. "The emergence of the phonograph, the automobile, the motion picture, radio and television, and other productions of the machine age have brought new influences and changing customs." So, you know, if we were going to update it, we would say the emergence of the smartphone and the internet and video games and social media and other productions of the machine age have brought new influences and changing customs. Human nature, adapting to changing times, expresses itself very differently today. So we have all of these new practices, these new technologies, but it hasn't made our youth better. It hasn't made our youth more righteous, more moral. In fact, you could argue that today's youth are worse off in a lot of ways. They're more amoral or immoral. They're more disrespectful of authority. They are, frankly, they're dumber as well and more ill-informed. And studies back that up, particularly in the nations of Israel. They're worse at math and English and science in general than they have been in the past. Curriculums in these countries have been dumbed down. And the influence of young people on culture and on society is much stronger today. Another quote from Mr. Armstrong here. Who determines what is popular music today? The teens. Adolescents determine dancing trends, motion picture themes, radio formats, and even advertisements in most fields of entertainment. And again, you can apply that to today's technology and culture. Social media, cultural trends, all determined by adolescents. So what's the cause of all this? What's the cause of this Isaiah 3 problem that we face? Children ruling over us. Well, back to this article from Mr. Armstrong. The fast-growing surge of teenage immorality, drugs, and violence is worldwide. Accompanying sexual promiscuity, news dispatches pile up an avalanche of reports on wreckage, destruction of property, especially schools, pillaging, arson, violence, and often murder. And all of those you can take and you can amplify the evidence today. There are facts and statistics on teenage immorality and juvenile delinquency to fill an entire book many times over, he writes. But why? What is the cause? The world doesn't want to hear the true answer. The world refuses to face the tragic truth. I'll say, so true. The true answer is this. Something has been taken away from this earth that sorely needs to be restored. That something is knowledge of, respect for, and obedience to the government and the law of God. That's what these young people need. They need knowledge of and respect for and obedience to the government and the law of God. And if you saw any of that video footage from those protests last Friday, there was no order. There was no structure. There was no government. There was no law. It was total mayhem. Our young people, children and teenagers and adolescents and singles, all of us, we all need law. We all need government. Just one final quote from Mr. Armstrong here. Why all this violence, this immorality? And you could add, why the chaos like we saw in British cities last Friday? Here is the cause. Human nature, which is vanity, without any purpose and absence of parental training and discipline. Where is the parental training over those youths that protested last week? I read an example of one parent who were proud. They were proud that their teenager was out there protesting, participating in that rebellion and chaos. Mr. Armstrong continues, there's no sense of purpose today. We are told we must adjust to living in a world of problems with no solutions. Nuclear war, the erasure of human life from the earth, appears to be just around the corner, liable to strike us at any second. Young people today are given nothing to live for, no hope, no future. They are more prosperous than ever, but they are bored. They are rebellious. The spirit of revolt is in the air. They resent all authority. It's a beautiful description of what we saw last week. Incredible description written by Mr. Armstrong more than 40 years ago. He really understood the cause of the hopelessness. He really understood the cause of the rebellion. He really understood the cause of the chaos. And it really is. It's really sad when you think about it, that we have a nation just full of young people who have no hope in the future. They have very little respect. They have very little civility for authority. I thought I'd conclude this section by just reading just watching what happened last Friday also made me think of the example of King David and Adonijah. You can read this example in 1 Kings 6, but King David was an old man at this time, and he was about to die, and his son Adonijah just a young boy, young man at the time. His son Adonijah comes along and he calculates this coup. He wanted to take the throne of his father before his father had even died. Thankfully, you know, God informed King David what was going on, and he was able to prevent Adonijah from taking the kingdom. But this is what it says in 1 Kings 1, verse 6. It says, "And his father had not displeased him at any time." So King David had not displeased Adonijah at any time in saying, "Why have you done so?" And he also was a very goodly man, and his mother bare him after Absalom. So Mr. Flurry writes about this in the Former Prophets book. But in verse 6 there, we just get a little bit of a glimpse into, you know, why Adonijah turned out to be such a rebel. And really, I mean, what we saw in London last week, what we saw in Trafalgar Square last week, we just saw thousands and thousands of Adonijahs. Thousands and thousands of Adonijahs. Thousands and thousands of young people who, what did that placard say? System change, not climate change. If you won't act like adults, we will. Who put these criminals in charge? We saw thousands of Adonijahs trying to overthrow the system, trying to overthrow the democratically elected government. And how does that happen? How do we get a nation full of Adonijahs? How did we get here? Well, I mean, 1 Kings 1 verse 6 provides at least part of the answer. King David didn't displease his son Adonijah. At no time did King David say, "Why have you done so?" King David didn't restrain Adonijah. King David didn't challenge Adonijah enough. He didn't go to Adonijah and say, "What are you thinking? What are you doing?" He didn't go to his son when he was young, when he was just 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, and say, "No. No, there'll be no disrespect. There'll be no rebellion in this house." The Moffat translation says that King David never checked him all his life. So Adonijah just grew up getting whatever he wanted. Adonijah grew up having no respect for adults. He thought he was an adult. He was a 6-year-old, and he spoke with other adults as if he was on their level. He was never checked. He was never questioned. "Why do you say that? Why did you think that? Why did you do that?" No. He was never confronted. Mr. Flurry wrote in the Former Prophets, he never told him to stop or asked him to explain his behavior. He just let him go. And really, I mean, that's the way Britain and America and, you know, loads of other people around the world are raising children today. We don't tell our children to stop. We don't hold our children accountable. We don't ask them to explain their behavior. We just let them go. We just let them go. Thousands of parents last Friday, they just let their children go. "Oh, you don't want to go to school today? You want to wag school and get on a bus and train and head down into London, where you're just going to clamor all over the Nelson Column, where you're going to clamor all over the Winston Churchill statue, yelling filthy statements against Theresa May? Go ahead. Go ahead. That's fine." And the end result is we have a whole body of youth. We have a whole body of young people that are much like Adonijah. They're much like Adonijah. They want to overthrow the government. They want to overthrow the system. And they're bringing the country down. It really is. It's a sad predicament. But then again, when you go back to the Bible, when you go back to prophecies like Isaiah 3, and when you see that God prophesied this exact trend, God prophesied this exact development. And if you study Isaiah 3, you'll see that this exact trend was prophesied to occur in the days right before the return of Jesus Christ. I mean, when you start looking at this trend from that, you know, much broader perspective, it really does become a lot more positive, a lot more exciting, because we can look at the fulfillment of this prophecy and we can know that Jesus Christ is about to return. Not only that, we can look at this prophecy and we can know that the Bible really is God's word. We can have faith in the Bible. And then if this prophecy was fulfilled, what other prophecies in the Bible have been fulfilled? And if the Bible is a book containing lots of fulfilled prophecy, then that proves God exists. That proves the Holy Bible is his word. There really is just so much to benefit from, so much to be excited about as we look at these prophecies. As hard as it is to witness the rebellion and the chaos and the mayhem last week at those protests, we really can just be hopeful that the return of Jesus Christ is drawing much, much closer. Okay, we'll take a really short break and then we'll come back and I'll finish off with one or two articles about some developments this week in Jerusalem.
This is KPCG-FM and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back. My name is Brad McDonald, and I'm your host for today. It's good to be back in the Trumpet Daily podcast studio, subbing in for Mr. Stephen Flurry. I just wanted to conclude the program by turning our attention to Israel, and specifically to the Temple Mount area there in Israel. This really is a super critical part of the world. Mr. Gerald Flurry has called Jerusalem a thermometer. It's a thermometer. We can look at events in Jerusalem and we can measure how close the return of Jesus Christ is. Now, the first event that I wanted to look at was the clash this week between Palestinians and Israeli police in the area of the Temple Mount. I'll just read from the Jerusalem Post here. This is from today. Dozens of Palestinians tried to force their way into the Golden Gate site of the Temple Mount on Tuesday, triggering scuffles with police officers, eyewitnesses said. According to the eyewitnesses, a number of Palestinians were arrested and lightly wounded during the confrontation, which erupted after the protesters removed an iron gate the police had placed at the entrance to the controversial site. So then, you know, a lot of people looking at this and they're warning that, you know, this might indicate that tensions are about to erupt again in and around the Temple Mount. The sources warned, however, that the continued closure of the site by the Jerusalem police to Muslim worshippers would spark violent clashes at the site and in other parts of East Jerusalem. So if you're aware of the prophecy in Zechariah 14, verse 2, and if you're aware of the writings from the Trumpet and from Mr. Flurry, you know that violence in the area of the Temple Mount and violence between the Palestinians and the Israelis really is something that we can expect. I mean, it's sad, it's tragic, but Bible prophecy says that it should be expected in the lead up to the return of Jesus Christ. Back to this article, the current crisis is the second of its kind on the Temple Mount in recent weeks. Last month, a scuffle broke out between Muslim protesters and police forces after Waqf guards tried to prevent a policeman wearing a kippah from entering the Dome of the Rock. The two incidences are seen in the context of the Waqf's effort to assert its absolute control over the Temple Mount, or Haram al-Sharif, the noble sanctuary. The Jordanian-controlled Waqf department in East Jerusalem has been facing growing criticism from Palestinians for its perceived failure to confront Israeli provocations at the holy site, including visits by Jewish groups and restrictions on construction and excavation work. So the Palestinians are becoming frustrated with this Jordanian-controlled institution that manages the Temple Mount. They're concerned that this the Waqf group is compromising and allowing Israel to have too much influence over the Temple Mount area. And that's going to tie into my next story, because it looks like the Waqf group, this Jordanian-controlled institution that manages the Temple Mount, is going to allow more Palestinian leaders and representatives into the organization. Just back to this article. It now seems, however, that some Palestinians are again trying to trigger a crisis with Israel over the Temple Mount. And this article talks about how that it might be in the interest of the Palestinians to do this before upcoming elections in Israel. These Palestinians believe that the government of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is keen on avoiding a major confrontation over the holy site ahead of the vote. They believe that this is the right time to try and change the status quo by embarking on moves like the one to reopen the Golden Gate site. The final paragraph. The renewed tensions on the Temple Mount show that the crisis surrounding the Golden Gate has not yet been solved. Judging from the reactions and statements of Palestinian officials and activists, the threat of a major confrontation over the Temple Mount remains as serious and as imminent as ever. So I was in Israel. I was in this exact area just a couple of weeks ago, and it really is amazing to walk around this Temple Mount area. I mean, we're talking about an area that's just a few acres in size, and the whole area is just a tinderbox waiting to be ignited. Within just a few acres, you have buildings that are some of the holiest buildings and sites to both Jews and Muslims. Within a few acres, you've got the Al-Aqsa Mosque, you've got the Western Wall, the City of David. There's the City of David is located in Silwan, which is an Arab neighborhood. I mean, it really is a situation that could explode at any moment. And even as you walk through that area, as you drive up the hill through Silwan past the City of David, I mean, you can almost, the tension is palpable. The tension is palpable. I mean, part of what gives it away is the fact that there's such a strong presence of Israeli defense forces. Guys with machine guns and girls with machine guns, just protecting the stability and the safety of the area. But this is a crisis that could explode at any moment. And there have been a couple of skirmishes here recently, which indicate that something could happen soon. This second story is connected to the skirmishes that occurred on the Temple Mount this week. This is from the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs, which is really an outstanding organization. February 19th, so this is yesterday. The Jerusalem Center, according to senior figures in the Fatah movement, so the Fatah party is one of the main Palestinian political parties. According to senior figures in the Fatah movement, the Palestinian Authority and Jordan have become have begun cooperation in anticipation of the announcement of the new U.S. peace plan known as the Deal of the Century. So Jared Kushner, Donald Trump's son-in-law, over the past couple of years has been working on a new peace plan for Jerusalem. And it's expected that Mr. Trump will announce this peace plan over the next few months. Mr. Trump himself has called it the deal of the century. You can almost tell it's a Donald Trump peace plan by just looking at the title, the Deal of the Century. But the Palestinian Authority and Jordan have begun to position themselves in anticipation of this deal and position themselves to undermine this potential peace deal between Israel and the Palestinians. Just back to this article. The new collaboration is based on understandings reached between Jordan's King Abdullah and Palestinian Authority leader Mahmoud Abbas in August 2017. Basically, the Jordanian-based group that manages the Temple Mount has agreed to incorporate more Palestinian officials into that institution. For the first time, the council, which was manned by pro-Jordanian figures, will include senior figures connected to the Palestinian Authority and Fatah, a move that Jordan has avoided since 1994. The Oslo Accords actually make this illegal. These Palestinian figures, you know, by law, aren't allowed into this institution that manages some of these sites on the Temple Mount. But now they're talking about allowing senior Palestinian figures into this group that manages the Temple Mount. Senior elements in Fatah call Jordan's agreement to the measure a historic change aimed at enabling joint control of the Mount. Jordan has special status on the Mount, and the 1994 peace treaty with Israel makes it the custodian of the Jerusalem holy places. According to senior Fatah sources, the Jordanians and the Palestinians fear Trump's Mideast peace plan seeks to transfer responsibility for the holy basin in East Jerusalem, including the Temple Mount, to joint Arab administration and to give Saudi Arabia a special status at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. To scuttle the move, the first step was taken on February 14th. The above-mentioned expansion of the Council of the Islamic Waqf and the holy places in Jerusalem. It will now include both Jordanian and Palestinian representatives, thereby establishing facts on the ground and signaling to the United States and Israel that Jordan will not relinquish its special status in Jerusalem and will cooperate with the Palestinian Authority in administering the Temple Mount. So this is going to give Palestinian leaders much more control and much more influence over the Temple Mount area. It's going to give Palestinian leaders much more leverage to cause conflict and to raise tensions in the Temple Mount area. The new Jordanian-Palestinian move is a clear violation of the Oslo Accords, which prohibit Palestinian Authority governmental activity in eastern Jerusalem. So this really could be a dangerous move, allowing Palestinian Authority figures, Fatah figures, into this organization that manages the Temple Mount area. And as everybody knows, the Palestinian Authority and Fatah, they've been infiltrated by the likes of Hamas. They're connected to Iran. They're not interested in peace. They're not interested in a two-state solution. They're not interested in sitting down with Israel and in good faith negotiating any kind of agreement. We just have fact after fact after fact proving that to be the case. Even the Palestinian Authority and Fatah, all they're interested in is hurting Israel. Now, I mean, they focus on hurting Israel politically. They're not interested in peace. And here we see that Jordan now appears to be bringing them into the organization that manages the Temple Mount there in East Jerusalem. Just the final quote from this article. The Jordanian-Palestinian collaboration on the Temple Mount issue, alongside the establishment by Jordan and the PA of the Joint Islamic Council to administer the Jerusalem holy places, is a move that spells danger for Israel and compromises its sovereignty in Jerusalem. So this is not going to make peace more likely. It's not going to make peace more possible. This is just going to add to the tension. This is going to add to the conflict. And as we know, as we can go back to that prophecy in Zechariah 14, verse 2, that Mr. Flurry's been teaching us about for many, many years now. That prophecy says that before the return of Jesus Christ, Jerusalem would be split in two. East Jerusalem would fall to the Palestinians. Again, there's going to be a lot of conflict and a lot of violence associated with the fulfillment of that prophecy. But again, the fact that Bible prophecy is on the precipice, in this case, of being fulfilled, shows how close we are to the return of Christ. It proves the veracity of God's Bible. It proves the existence of God. And, I mean, all of these prophecies just give us so much hope. They give us so much insight into this crazy, crazy world. So there's just so much to be thankful for with Bible prophecy. But keep an eye on Israel. Keep an eye on Jerusalem. Keep an eye on the Temple Mount. It's not in the news very often, but it seems every week there's something happening in this area. And as we know, it really is so critical to end time events, so critical to the world today and to the imminent return of Jesus Christ. Okay, it's been great to be back in the studio. I'm not sure when I'll be back, but it'll be soon, hopefully. Have a great day.